Jungle is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, we start hour number two. We should go back to back. The plan is to go back to back with interviews. Coming up next segment, Will Brinson, a CBS Sports senior NFL writer. Coming up momentarily, the driver of the number nine car, Chase Elliott. Now we'll have that for you momentarily. This email reads, "Hey, Romeo, really glad that Embiid is going to start being a, quote, good a-hole. Philly can officially consider that problem resolved. Regards alcoholics who are going to start, quote, drinking responsibly." All right, then. As promised, we are joined right now by the driver of the number nine car for Hendrick Motorsports. He is entering his fifth full-time Cup Series season. Two-time most popular driver, six-time Cup Series winner. He's qualified for the NASCAR playoffs in each of his first four full-time Cup seasons. You want to tune into NASCAR's season-opening Super Bowl event, the 62nd Daytona 500. It's at Daytona International Speedway. It is Sunday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Chase Elliott is my guest. Chase, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. So, as I mentioned, it is your fifth time entering the Daytona 500. So, how different does it feel now versus your first Daytona 500? For instance, is it something you're pretty comfortable with now and it's just another race, or is that impossible because it is the Daytona 500?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I feel like at this point, I treat it that way for sure. You know, I think you have to kind of treat it that way as time goes on. But that first one, you know, I definitely remember a lot of nerves. But I feel like the past couple of years have been pretty normal, which I think is really good. And I've enjoyed kind of settling into that and take some time to get there for sure for me. But, yeah, now it just I treat it like any other Sunday and just go about my job as I always do.
Chase Elliott joining us. You know, I'm going to go back to that in a minute. I want to ask you really quickly about the clash on Sunday. That was pretty wild now. Ultimately, you finished seventh, but there were a lot of drivers with a lot of opinions and a lot of things they wanted to get off their chests after that race. What did you make of that whole thing?
Yeah, we finished seventh and crashed and didn't finish. But, yeah, you know, that race is, you know, the race is always wild. I'm not sure that it's really a surprise to anybody. I know there was some ruffled feathers and people upset or this or that, but you know, that's good. I'm glad that people run their mouths and like to complain because it gets attention and gets people talking about it. So that's a win really at the end of the day.
It is. Chase Elliott joining us. I agree with you. You know, it's always interesting to me that your season opener is the biggest race of the season because it is like starting with the Super Bowl. So from a driver's perspective, how do you go about balancing the pressure of the first race and the desire to win it, obviously, while at the same time acknowledging it is just one race in a long season?
Yeah, I think the way I've kind of learned, I guess, to treat this race, and maybe this isn't the right way, but where I'm at with it right now is I kind of treat it like its own event and its own thing. I kind of take these first 2 weeks, you know, the Clash and the 500, and just say, look, Daytona is Daytona. These 2 weeks are just their own animal, their own event. And then I feel like our season really gets kicked off in Vegas, and that's going to give you more of a deciding factor as to how your season is going to go anyway from there.
Chase Elliott joining us. He is the driver of the number nine for Hendrick Motorsports. Seems like there's been a lot of talk outside the team about the new Camaro this year. How significant are the changes? How does that ride feel to you right now?
Yeah, well, again, you know, the Speedway stuff is just so different than what we're going to have intermediate tracks and short tracks. So I think that's why a lot of times it's really hard to gauge and judge where you stack up and see if you've improved any until you really get to that first intermediate track. That first mile and a half. So, you know, I'm excited about it. I know Chevrolet and Hendrick and our group has worked really hard in trying to improve and make our car better. And, you know, to the naked eye, I don't think the new Camaro looks a ton different from the one we ran last year. Some minor changes, I wouldn't call anything major, but, you know, we're just trying to stack little things on top of each other to make improvements. And, in this world, with as competitive as it is nowadays, you're not going to just hit a home run. It's singles and maybe a double here or there, and that's going to get you where you need to go. So hopefully we hit a lot of singles and got on base a lot with this car.
Daytona's upcoming. Chase Elliott is my guest. Now, you've won six times in the last two seasons, which gives you six wins before you turn 24 in November, which is third most ever. What does the next level look like for you this season?
I think for me, I just want to try to assert our team and get myself and our group just amongst that top. I felt like the past few years there's five or six guys that I feel like can win any given weekend and have the ability to go win, and they're not just a threat at a certain racetrack here or there. They have the opportunity to go and win every week, and I think that's ultimately where I want to be. I just want to assert myself amongst that group. And you know, if you're in that group, I think the opportunity for championships and the opportunity for a whole bunch of wins is going to be there. And ultimately, that's where I want to get to. I think if you get to that point, the sky's the limit. And it's just about, you know, having some good fortune, but being smart. But you gotta put yourself in that top five or six guys. And if you're in that every week, you're going to have a chance to do some great things.
Or you could be one of those guys and be in that group not only every week, but literally your entire career. Like Jimmy Johnson, he announced it's going to be his final season. What is NASCAR going to lose when he runs his last race?
And I think they're going to, you know, we're going to see probably the greatest to ever do this to this point leave. And, you know, that's a lot of, I know the GOAT topic gets tossed around in all different types of sports. Probably too much, but with Jimmy, I don't see how you can argue what he's done in the period of time he's done it in, with the amount of class he has shown throughout his entire career. I think it's second to none. I just don't see that being topped by anybody else right now. So, you know, one day I'd love to outdo him. For sure, but I think we're going to see the greatest to do this so far leaving, and a great guy at that. So I'm looking forward to racing this last season with him. I hope he has some great moments this year. I'm as big a fan as anybody, so I'm pulling for him.
I respect that, Chase. And as a California guy, I've always had his back. I love Jimmy. I love the way he handles himself on the track. I think he's a class act. He's an amazing driver. And again, early in his career when he got all that flack for being a California kid. So I understand that and I respect it. Now, with respect to what you just said, with him moving on after this year, the talk does shift to you being the face of Hendrick Motorsports. What's your reaction when you hear that? And does that change how you approach the job as a result of that?
Yeah, it's weird, for sure, just to know that I'll have been there the longest, I guess, after Jimmy leaves, which is really crazy to think about, but also hard to believe I'm starting year five. It's kind of nuts, too, to think about how fast these past 4 years have gone by, but I don't think it changes my focus or my approach really at all. You know, that's kind of a – I feel like that's an outward – view that people kind of on the outside have and look at it, but I don't know that really that feel is there internally. I don't feel that at the moment, you know, by any means. And you know, I'm gonna keep doing my thing and do my job. And who knows? I mean, you could get somebody in there next year that's been around for a long time that might fit that role better or something, but I don't know. You know, we'll just wait and see, but I don't really see anything changing much for me.
Or maybe not, Chase, or maybe somebody doesn't step up. Like, because, as I mentioned off the top, you won the most popular driver award again at the end of the season. We've talked about your popularity in the past and the fact that you've got a long way to go, for instance, to catch Dale Jr. and your dad, but how much does it mean to you that you won this award? Better yet, how much is that award about the award itself, and how much of that is about the experience of going to the track every week and feeling the level of love and respect that you get from the fans pretty much everywhere?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I've said this a lot, and I'm sure people are probably tired of hearing it, but you know, I'm not sure that trophy really means a fraction as much as what the interaction you have with people at the racetrack and the desire and the fire and the passion that people have to see my team want to do good. I mean, I think that to me speaks volumes, way above any trophy you could ever get, no matter how many trophies you have. I think that's massive. And I've enjoyed that side of things more than anything. I don't take that for granted. I often wonder, I often wonder why, but I definitely have appreciated it, and hopefully we can do well for the folks that pull for us on Sundays.
He is entering his fifth full-time Cup Series season, already a two-time most popular driver, a six-time Cup Series winner, and the driver of the number nine car for Hendrick Motorsports. Once again, you want to tune into NASCAR's season-opening Super Bowl event. It is the 62nd Daytona 500. It's at Daytona International Speedway, Sunday, 2:30 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Chase, great to have you back. Good luck this weekend. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Jim. Y'all be good.
You too, Chase. Great talking to you. Yeah, I'm not at all surprised that he's as popular as he is. Chase has got a lot of that it. It in the car, it outside the car, on the track, outside the track, connecting with everybody. Makes it seem easy. He's just so good at it. Chase Elliott. If you want, you could probably spin that disclaimer, because that's another NASCAR interview that hits its mark.
Good guy, top performer. They know what they're doing.
Respects the fans.
There's no better league to deal with than NASCAR.
Gives back, appreciates the sport, has time for the fans.
And NASCAR has won me over.
I like it. I get it.
They call on time. They do good interviews. They have good attitudes.
It's big. It's not going away.
Good interview, shows up on time.
Every one of those guys is like that.
It won me over.
I will say for the record once again, I've done a 180.
He's not Tony Stewart. Rusty Wallace is my favorite guest. And if it's not Rusty Wallace, it's Clint Boyer and his bus driver, Curtis.
I did not break the pace car.
Carl Edwards, class act, Trevor Bayne. The best energy.
And I love Jeff Gordon.
I can't pick favorites, but Jimmy Johnson's my favorite.
And Brad Keselowski is right there.
Chase has got a lot of that it.
Appreciate it, Jim. Y'all be good.
Good job, Alvin. Alvin, adding to the disclaimer from the current interview. So I wonder, if you're looking at Daytona and you're looking at the action this weekend, and yes, I am actually mentioning that. Do you know why I'm mentioning that? Because the big head, James Kelly, is trying to find a way to get on the air with me on Friday. Prior to Daytona, Chase, plus 1,200, fifth choice. If you're into that sort of thing. Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, plus 900. I've already loaded up on Riv for the weekend. I'm going to be transparent about that. I'm playing some roulette. I'm just dropping chips around the table. I've seen Janet do that. Janet's good at that. Janet loves playing roulette. She gets out her little pink chips, little stack here, little stack there, little stack here. That's what I'm doing at Riv. I've loaded up on a bunch of these guys that I feel good about. Maybe I'll do that for Daytona. Papa John's a liar. I mean, he did an interview where he said, yeah, I didn't really have 40 pies in 30 days. Then why'd you say you did, PJ? Come on, man. I will get to that later on. Adam Hawk will be appearing on this show sometime between now and the end of the program, because I've got to find out what this guy's deal is and what his plan and strategy are for Riviera this year. You might recall the pictures. Him on the other side of the rope, like an absolute dope, reaching out to Rory, who doesn't know he exists. The following year, on the other side of the rope, like an absolute dope, reaching out to Eldrick, his idol, who also blew right by him. Adam, it's not working. What is your strategy for this year? Think about it. We added a third guest. I'll give you a hint. It's none of you. I'll give you one more hint. It's Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo at 11:20 Pacific. When we come back, Will Brinson. Don't go anywhere. You know, it's never a good look when you untuck a long, bulky dress shirt. I think a lot of you think, well, that's a shirt. Oh, just untuck it. The problem is, a lot of these shirts are not made to be worn untucked. So you think it makes you look casual, but you end up looking like a slob. That's why Untuck It does make shirts which are specifically designed to be worn untucked. A casual shirt that's not too long and not too short. It's just right. Shirts designed so well that GQ actually calls them perfection. And they are. Untuck It shirts are a go-to for any occasion, from casual to dressy. Not only do they look good, they feel amazing. Even the wrinkle-free options. Untuck It offers 50 fit combinations. So tall, short, slim, and bigger guys of all ages can experience the perfect fitting shirt. What you want to do is log on to untuckit.com, check out all the new arrivals, use the promo code ROME, and get 20% off your first purchase. You can also go to any of their over 80 retail locations now nationwide. Stop hiding your shirt with your pants.
Stop hiding your pants with your shirt. Untuckit.com, your solution to perfecting casual. Use the promo code ROME and get a big fat 20% off your first purchase. Untuckit.com.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Thanks to Chase Elliott. He is a cool, cool dude. It's not hard for me to see why he was voted most popular on the circuit twice already, and he's not even 5 years in yet. Tom Izzo, Michigan State head basketball coach, coming up in hour number three. Right now, though, we are joined by a CBS Sports senior writer, host of the Pick Six NFL podcast, friend of the program, the preeminent sports and beer analyst slash reporter in the greater Raleigh area. He is Will Brinson. What's up, Will?
Jim, what's going on, man? I appreciate the upgrade on my title there. Nothing says niche content like Raleigh beer and sports expert.
My man, you are all of that, and you are getting bigger and better every single day. Now, Will, you are a legendary Phil Rivers fan. How are you feeling right now that he is no longer a member of the Chargers? Has that sunk in for you?
I was just glad I broke up with the Chargers. You got to be the dumper. You don't want to be the dumpy in these situations. And I, we sort of saw this coming, right? I mean, Rivers moved his family to Florida. He didn't do that. To make the commute longer. You know, he didn't want to deal with. He was already dealing with San Diego to L.A. He didn't need Florida to L.A. And it just seemed like the Chargers had sort of decided to move on. The crazy thing to me is that Anthony Lynn, they basically picked Anthony Lynn, who won 5 games last year and then got a contract extension. No big deal. They picked him over Philip Rivers, who's one of the 3 greatest players in franchise history, which, sure, go for it. What I don't understand is why they think they're just going to go to Tyrod Taylor and it's going to fix everything. What about this offensive line that's been problematic? What about the injuries that have been problematic for a decade now with the Chargers? Maybe not a coincidence there that they can't stay healthy. And so, to me, look, I get what the Chargers are doing. They probably need to reboot at some point. Maybe they decide to trade for Cam Newton. Maybe they try to sign Tom Brady. Maybe they draft, somebody. I mean, maybe they pick up somebody in the first round. Maybe Tua falls to him. Who knows? Justin Herbert. To me, it feels like they handled this poorly, and they're sort of trying to circle back and to try and make things right by Rivers with this whole montage thing.
We were talking to Will Brinson. All right, so there's a lot to unpack there. Now, Will, the thinking had been that Tom Brady would be very interested in joining the Chargers, but to your point, when you look at the Chargers' pass protection being near the bottom the last 2 seasons and below league average for more than a decade, I'll get back to Brady in 1 minute. What does that tell you, though, about Philip Rivers?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it says that you have a team in the Chargers that, like, I don't know. I mean, like, I think you watch Philip Rivers play, and I'm biased, right? I mean, I got a little bit of bias built here, but I think when you watch Philip Rivers play, you see somebody who didn't fall off as much as people want to think. I mean, Pro Football Focus grades this offensive line as last or next to last over the last 2 years. And I think there are a couple of spots for Philip Rivers when you look at where he could go in free agency that make a lot of sense and were really tailored to his skill set. First of all, Tampa Bay, I think he'd be a good fit with Bruce Arians. We saw what Arians did with Carson Palmer. He's able to revitalize his career. You know, you have that hang in the pocket, stay tough, in the face of pressure, throw the ball down the field. You got great weapons of Mike Evans, Chris Godwin. You know, they don't have the run game that you might like to have, but maybe they go out and trade for David Johnson. Who knows and what will happen with that situation. But then Indianapolis, to me, is even better. Frank Reich, Phil Rivers, old quarterback's coach from San Diego, he loves Rivers. They have a great offensive line, a strong run game, good weapons, and a pretty good defense. I think Phil in that dome where Peyton Manning played could really thrive for Indianapolis, and I would be surprised if he doesn't have a big market out there.
I think that makes perfect sense for him. Will Brinson joining us. All right, so back to Tom Brady. If you're Tom Brady and you know what you know about the offensive line for the Chargers and what you and I are talking about right now, how big of a red flag would that be for Brady when it comes to the Chargers?
Here's what I don't get, Jim. If Tom, like, we know about Tom Brady is that he wants to win, right? Is he trying to make this move to win football games and to win a Super Bowl without Bill Belichick, this hypothetical move? Because if he's doing that, to me, it doesn't make sense to go to L.A. One, that offensive line has been a problem. Two, we've seen the receivers. They have a ton of talent there, but Hunter Henry's a free agent. Keenan Allen and Mike Williams haven't exactly been the healthiest guys in the NFL over the last few years. And then three, why would you go to Patrick Mahomes' division? Who would go to Patrick Mahomes in Andy Reid's division if you want to win a Super Bowl? You're leaving the AFC East to face Patrick Mahomes twice a year? That's lunacy. If Brady wants to go to L.A. and build his brand, more power to him, and I salute him for building a TB12 facility out there in L.A. I encourage everybody to avoid tomatoes and try avocados and to do all the things that Tom Brady preaches. It'll probably make you healthier. But if this guy's about winning, then in my mind, it would be lunacy to go out to L.A. I think somewhere like Nashville makes more sense, and I think New England makes a lot more sense, too.
Preach. You know what I hate? I absolutely hate the inflammatory qualities of tomatoes. Man, I hate that so much. Yeah, sure I don't, Will. If I eat a tomato, I'm a legend. You imagine a guy saying, oh, no, I don't eat tomatoes. I don't eat tomatoes, man. They're not healthy. What, tomatoes aren't healthy? If I eat one tomato, I'm a legend.
Dude, I mean, he's cutting out, like, high-quality fruits and vegetables from his diet because that's how good his diet is. Like, I'm just trying to cut out, like, beer and Cheez-Its. Tom Brady's out here cutting out tomatoes.
No, seriously, if I said no to bread before dinner, I'm like, man, I'm a legend. The discipline is just unbelievable. All right, Will Brinson, my guest. What about Drew Brees? Now, if Drew Brees, let me just jump ahead to that. If he were to retire, is it a foregone conclusion that the Saints would go to Taysom Hill? What would happen if he did retire?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We talked about this on the Pick Six podcast episodes coming up on Thursday and Friday. We had to pre-record them because I'm going out of Great Wolf Lodge to do some water slides with my son for his belated birthday. So, with Breeze, two things about this. One, I don't get this Taysom Hill stuff. I understand that he's a great gadget player and he's been an important piece for the Saints in terms of what they've done over the last few years. And I think that Sean Payton can be as creative as he wants and really come up with some interesting things for Taysom Hill. This guy has 13 career passing attempts, Jim. How is he going to fill Drew Brees' shoes in New Orleans if Brees retires? I think what Peyton's doing is he's puffing up the Taysom Hill's value. He'd love to trade him or let somebody try and come in with a restricted free agent offer and let not worry about matching it. And then if Brees retires, what Sean Payton can do is go out and say, hey, you know, you're talking about Indianapolis, you're talking about L.A., you're talking about Nashville. No, no, no. I have the best open job. New Orleans with me, Sean Payton, the offensive genius, Mike Thomas, Alvin Kamara, a great offensive line, a dome that you can play in. Hey, Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, Jameis Winston, why don't you come down here and let's win a title? I think that's the spot that no one's talking about if Drew Brees retires. All of a sudden, New Orleans will become the best location for all the free agent quarterbacks.
Will Brinson joining us. What about that, though? What if you don't get one of those guys, Will? What if it comes down to Taysom Hill and Teddy Bridgewater? If that's your choice and that's the offense you have, what they have right now, who would you rather have as your quarterback, Bridgewater or Hill?
I'd rather go with Teddy Bridgewater, which is exactly what Sean Payton did when Drew Brees got hurt last year. That's the thing that I can't get past is if Taysom Hill is the future quarterback for the Saints, why didn't they put him in last year? I understand you have to rebuild your offense and change what you want to do, but you have a guy like Alvin Kamara. You have a guy like Mike Thomas. Can't guard Mike is one of the best wide receivers in football. You're going to minimize the number of times he's touching the ball because you want to build a Lamar Jackson-like offense around Taysom Hill. It just doesn't pass go look in the mirror and say it out loud test. Like, it just doesn't pass it. And so I think they would go Teddy Bridgewater, even though the rumblings you hear that Teddy's going to try and go out there and hit the market again.
Will Brinson, my guest. Will, one last thought before you go. Kind of a big picture item. The 49ers, of course, came within minutes of winning the Super Bowl, and then they came up short. Now, Will, if you look back, the Seahawks losing to the Patriots the way that they did seemed to devastate that team. The Falcons have never been the same since their Super Bowl loss. Obviously, there are other factors in play, but could you see the loss to the Chiefs that the 49ers suffered when they were that close to winning, lingering for them the way it has for other teams, or are they built differently?
Well, I think it's somewhere in between, Jim. To me, it's a team that is coached well enough with Kyle Shanahan. You know, they didn't lose any coaches in this hiring process. Robert Saleh is sticking around. They have a lot of talent on the defensive line. That pass rush is a lot of, you know, that sort of pass rush is easier to generate year over year. Versus, you know, having a great run defense, et cetera. So I don't think they'll see a huge drop-off in that regard. I think Shanahan's schemes offensively will keep them going. But to me, it's a little bit like last year with the Rams, where, you know, they just felt like, oh, man, like a gut punch when you get to the Super Bowl. You're overwhelmed by Bill Belichick. Your offense sort of clogs up. And I wouldn't be surprised if the 49ers took a step back next year and were somewhere in the 8, 9, 10 win range. Right there in the mix in the division. We know Seattle's going to have Russell. The Rams are trying to sort of retool on the fly. They don't have a ton of draft picks, but they have talent. And then Arizona looks like a team on the rise to me. So I think the division is tougher. I think there's a lot of tough teams in the NFC. And so I could absolutely see them taking a step back, although I think the infrastructure that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have built there is something that can last over the next 3, 4, 5 years.
He is a CBS Sports senior writer, host of the Pick Six NFL podcast, good friend of the program, and again, very importantly, the preeminent sports beer analyst and reporter in Raleigh. Will, it's good to have you back. I appreciate you. Great having you on.
Always fun, Jim.
Always fun, Will. Good job, man. I love Will Brinson. I love Will Brinson because Will Brinson loves his job. Man, he's always upbeat, always positive, always with good takes, good intel. Even if you don't agree with it, you got to respect where he's coming from. My man, Will Brinson, used to be a part of our daily TV show back in the day. So make sure you look for him. Speaking of podcasts, I've got episode 116 of the Jim Rome podcast. I said 116 eps. I'd put them up against anybody's. Good, good quality guests. And the price is fair. It's free. Kyle Long is going to join us after the program today. So make a note of that. I'm going to tape that a little bit later on. We'll push that out a little bit later than we normally do, but it's going to be worth it. Kyle Long on the Jim Rome podcast. We are talking more offline, off air, about rebooting the World Tour. I'm close to an announcement. I've got the venue. I've got the city. I've got the date. I'm not ready to announce, but the important things are in place. Did you hear what I just said? We're going to bring it back. We'll roll it out. A tour stop, a tour stop, a tour stop, a tour stop. I've got the city. I've got the venue. I've got the date. Everything except the actual announcement publicly. Keep it in mind. When we come back, a few more things to get to, including Papa John told one of the biggest lies ever. I'm disappointed. And no, my guy Mark Shapiro is not going to jail. PJ. I've got an update on all that, but first, I've got a sports update, a more important update, really. Here it is. Here is Rich.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
This weekend on CBS, the PGA Tour features a field including Tiger Woods and the top five golfers in the world competing at the Genesis Invitational. Saturday and Sunday, 3 Eastern, 12 Pacific on CBS. All right, so that's how you watch. Unless you're Hawk, you might have a different plan. And I will get to that later on. I do need his plan. My thanks to Will Brinson. I've got Tom Izzo coming up next hour. We already had Chase Elliott as well. All right, so last November, one of the most amazing interview clips in the history of amazing interview clips made the rounds.
but it had nothing to do with sports. Yet all of you clones were talking about it. It was so incredible and so improbable that it trended worldwide on Twitter. And it did hijack my show for the better part of 10 minutes or 10 segments. I don't even need to ask if you remember that clip because you do. How the hell could you forget Papa John, of all people, sitting down for an interview with WDRB News, threatening a day of reckoning and saying my good friend and legend, Mark Shapiro, should be in jail, and divulging that he had slammed 40 of their pies in only 30 days. How could you forget any of that?
Stay tuned. The day of reckoning will come. The record will be straight.
The day of reckoning will come and the record will be straight. Like that clip could have been from November of 1919, not November of 2019, and it would still be fresh on the brain. Because for as bizarre as it sounded, it looks so much worse. My man was sweating garlic butter, looking like 39 of the 40 pies went directly into his face, as if he pushed entire pizza pies into a syringe and injected it directly into his face. And sounding like at 39, because number 40 somehow got lodged in his throat.
I've had over 40 pizzas in the last 30 days, and Mark Shapiro should be in jail. He has no pizza experience. He's never been in the pizza category. I would just say, stay tuned. The day of reckoning will come. The record will be straight.
What an incredible line that was. I've had 40 pizzas in the last 30 days, and Mark Shapiro should be in jail because he has no pizza experience or experience in the category. I mean, that truly was one of the weirdest 30 seconds in American history. The former CEO and founder of the third largest pizza chain in the country threatening a day of reckoning and jail time for a legend that he says should have never been in the pizza category. Yeah, we, the jury, find Mark Shapiro guilty. Guilty of never being in the pizza category. Throw the book at him. Take him away, Judge. Speaking of which, I did see Mark Shapiro on the row in Miami the week of Super Bowl. Know this about Mark Shapiro. Now, put aside for a minute that Mark Shapiro has done more for my TV career than anybody, period. Put that aside for a minute. And there's been a lot of people that have done a lot of things for my TV career, but I could argue that nobody's done more for it than Mark Shapiro. Mark Shapiro is one of the most dynamic, charismatic, brilliant leaders I've been around. This guy's a genius, straight up. One of the most talented guys ever. And he comes on the set in Miami to give me a little bit of love. Giant smile on his face, like always. Jimmy, what's going on? I'm like, oh my God, Mark, dude, I am so glad you're not in jail. I am so glad you're not in jail. This guy's laughing so hard and saying, do you believe that? Do you believe that? And all I could say is, bring it in, brother. Bring it in. Hug it out, man. I am so glad you're not in jail, Shap. I am so glad. But not as glad as I am that PJ is trending yet again. And the reason the Papa is trending yet again is because he sat down yet again and did an interview yet again. And even though it sounded like somebody fished that pie out of his gullet and cleared up his voice, the stuff that he was saying this week made about as much sense as the stuff that he was running back out there last November. All the sound comes courtesy of the H3 podcast, which dropped a two-hour conversation with PJ only 48 hours ago. A two-hour conversation that at last check had already racked up over 1 million views on YouTube, and with good reason. Not every day did a disgraced, ousted CEO who sweats garlic butter sits down and tells their side of the story in great detail for great length, especially while still in the midst of legal action. Except PJ, he doesn't give a damn. He already lost a $1 billion company. What else is left? The interview started with it logically, where it should start, right? Interviewer says, what do we call you? Papa? Papa John. John. Pizza inhaler. garlic butter lover. Like, what do we call you, man?
Do I call you Papa? What do people call you?
Papa.
What about your friends and family? Do they call you Papa?
Yes.
Everyone really? Calls you Papa.
Yes.
Awkward. In other words, he loves it when you call him Papa. Even though everybody was calling this guy by his self-gloss of Papa, there was one person who was not. One person would not give him what he wanted and call him Papa.
I know you're recently divorced. You were married for a long time. Was she calling you Papa?
No, she never called me Papa.
She called you John.
Yeah, she okay. called me John.
Okay, she never called you Papa.
Shout out to the interviewer, Ethan Klein, for getting PJ to admit that the ex Heat did not call him Papa. Got that on tape. Way to get that on tape. Shout out again to Ethan Klein for going to an extremely awkward place with it seconds later.
Are you dating?
Slowly but surely.
Papa's getting out there.
No, I wouldn't
getting
say that.
Some weird out there, Papa?
I wouldn't say that either.
I wonder if there's any, like, if girls might be into, like, role-playing with you where they, like, that you play the Papa or some you know how they say, like, call me Daddy? Call me Papa?
Would you want someone that is, let's say, in the pizza category?
I don't know if you really can pick. You know, I think if you just go out and look for certain attributes, you know, I don't think that'll work. I think it'll just have to happen.
Gotta respect that. Hey, would you want somebody in the pizza category? That's one of the best questions ever. Like, are you partial to blondes, brunettes? Oh, me. No, I'm partial to somebody in the pizza category, man. That's always a huge turn on. Let's get to the real reason, though, the interview's making so many headlines. It's because Papa John addressed his claim that he hammered 40 of their pies in 30 days.
You did an interview, let's start here, in November, in which you famously claimed you have eaten over 40 pizza in 30 days.
Well, I didn't say I'd eaten 40 pizzas in 30 days. I said I had 40 pizzas in 30 days.
Well, hold on. We're going to split hairs here.
Well, when I said had a pizza, means I'm inspecting.
Right.
You know, and so I'm not eating every pizza. I may be eating parts of pizzas. But
how many pizzas you eat on a weekly basis?
I probably eat 8 or 9 slices a week. Probably when I was at Papa John's, I was probably 12 or 15 because we're always testing new product. You know, pizza's actually very nutritious, very healthy. You just can't eat a bunch of it.
That sounds like pizza propaganda.
It sounds like a lie. That's what it sounds like. 40 seconds of pure lies. Dude just copped a lying to the American public about going all Kobayashi on 40 pies in 30 days, and played out some bizarre semantics card about the difference between having pizza and eating pizza, and then proceeded to call pizza very nutritious and very healthy. Are you going to lie about that later on, or is that what I heard?
Well, I didn't say I'd eaten 40 pizzas in 30 days. I said I had 40 pizzas in 30 days.
Well, hold on. We're going to split hairs here.
I didn't say that I'd eaten 40 pizzas in 30 days. I said I had 40 pizzas in 30 days. This dude talking out of both sides of his pizza-inhaling mouth. Look, 40 pizzas in 30 days is roughly 1 1/3 pizzas a day, entire pizzas a day. That's the stuff of legend. But now you're going to backpedal and say that you were inspecting pizzas and only eating 8 or 9 slices per week. Come on, Pops. Big difference. Inhaling 1.3 entire pizzas a week is a hell of a lot less remarkable than 1.3 a day. I mean, so did you lie to the American public? Or did you misspeak back in November? Or did you go all Roger Clemens with it and just misremember?
I think he misremembers the conversation that
we had. Bookmark that for a second. There's a lot more where that came from. And they got around to talking about that racial slur, too, that cost him his job. And he's talking out of both sides of his pizza-inhaling mouth on that one as well. Oh, and at last check, Mark Shapiro, still not in jail. Nor is he going to jail. You believe this guy walked that back? Yeah, no, I didn't have 40 pizzas. I didn't eat 40 pizzas. I had 40 pizzas. Oh,
Why didn't you say so? Man, stop lying. When we come back, I'll try and finish that thought. I'll try. Tom Izzo coming up next hour. And more. Phone lines are open. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Do not go anywhere.